Reynolds has made my dreams come true. And I've given him what he desires most in return.
And what's that?
Every piece of me.
He's a very demanding man, isn't he? Must be quite a challenge to be with him.
Yes. Maybe he is the most demanding man.
Hello, welcome to the Extra Credits Plus, and happy new year to all the hungry, fussy boys out there. We, of course, are discussing Paul Thomas Anderson's Phantom Thread. I'm Trey.
And I'm Kelsey.
What a movie we're going to be talking about today.
I am so excited.
One of our shared favorite films, one of our shared favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, I mean, lots this to get is into. One of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah.
But we haven't really talked about it that much. I think we just watch it and have a knowing glance of this is a shared masterpiece and then move on with our day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also don't think we've seen this movie more than twice before this past week.
Yeah, it's one that we like to save.
Right. And we just watched it like three times at home. We just saw it in the theater 2 days ago.
Incredible experience. Yeah.
Honestly, like a one-of-a-kind theater experience. The sound design was wild.
Yeah.
I felt like I was watching Oppenheimer, like when Alma was scraping her toast.
Yeah, well, the sound adds so much texture to this world, even like high heels on hardwood or doorknobs turning. Those natural sounds are so pronounced and help ground the world.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have this swelling score propelling us through this really volatile narrative.
It's so good.
Yeah, because the film really, and the reason I'm so excited to talk to you about it today, is it's a quiet meditation on the psychological shifts, I guess you could say, of these characters like Alma and Reynolds and Cyril even. And on the big screen, I picked up on different performance choices and kind of where those shifts maybe happened in more subtle ways. And I'm so excited to talk to you about that today, too, in terms of the subtext.
Yeah, I mean, this is maybe PTA's most suggestive movie.
Mm-hmm.
Much of what I think he's going for in this screenplay that is very dense is not explicit.
Yeah.
And so, there's a lot of theories I have about this film. And some of them, I think, have some evidence. Others, I'm going for it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I think there is more going on in this movie than I recognized the first time I watched it.
For sure.
Also, it's New Year's. It's a New Year's movie. It's New Year's Eve right now.
Yeah.
And as a surprise, we will also be sharing our PTA ranking at the end of this. Are you ready for that, Trey?
Yeah, I think so. I have some hot takes in my top three. I think the way my top three is structured, it's going to surprise some listeners.
My list has shifted.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've shifted my list like just this morning. So it's like constantly changing. I feel like that is natural for PTA fans because you watch, I feel like he's made five masterpieces.
Yeah.
In like three or four other great films. So it's hard to have like a really fixed list. But yeah, happy new year, everyone. It was a great 2023.
Yeah.
Our show really grew a lot. Mm-hmm. We had some great guests on. We had some great conversations with listeners over this past year too. Like we've gotten so many nice emails, fun DMs to talk back and forth about movies. Apple reviews have been fantastic. Thank you to anybody who's left those. Anyone who's rated us, the patrons.
Yeah.
We appreciate all of your support in helping continue our show and making sure it's independent still, which is very important to us going forward in 2024.
Yes. Thank you so much to everyone who has rated our show on any platform that you listen to podcasts on, but especially the like major platforms like 5 stars on Spotify and especially Apple reviews help our show grow so much.
Mm-hmm.
And those have all been so kind. So we really, really appreciate all of our listeners this year and any new listeners. Hello.
Yeah.
But I want to give a huge shout out to our Living Plus members over on Patreon because last year we reflected on the eve of 2023.
Yeah.
And we're just talking about how thankful and grateful we were to be able to have such a big and growing community to talk about movies.
You know?
But over at Living Plus, you all have seriously made our dreams come true in terms of having like a community where we get to see what you're watching and get to see what you think about movies we are deep diving. Like that has been a really special addition to this year that mm-hmm. I just never, I guess, thought would happen. Like, it sounds cheesy,
I didn't think so,
I guess,
either.
To be like, this is a dream of ours, but yeah. It really what is. And so I just want to thank everyone and tell you, we like genuinely appreciate you. And, you know, we're not just like talking into a void, which is nice.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like that. And then when we get our Spotify Wrapped like a month ago and it was like 400% increased listeners, I was like, oh yeah, that happened. People are listening. That's right. But yeah, thank you everybody. We really appreciate you. I'm really excited for 2024. We're already planning like big guests for the next few months, which I'm mm-hmm. excited for.
Yeah.
Okay. So Phantom Thread, before we even jump into this film, I want to talk PTA. He's one of the great American screenwriters and directors. He is one of the filmmakers who inspired our show. Our first episode ever was on Licorice Pizza.
Yeah.
We never really heard the nuance from our favorite critics that we were reading or listening to. And that really motivated us to want to talk about Licorice Pizza, talk about PTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's actually a good place to start, because I think PTA makes movies for people like us that are a little bit obsessive.
Yeah.
Sometimes can be control freaks, which is pretty awesome for me personally, because I think it's so cool to see a filmmaker make a lot of his movies about family and found family, sure.
Yeah.
But he makes investigation, scheduling, process cinematic.
Yeah.
I think he would be a great scheduler of podcasting if his movies stopped working out for him. Like, if he just stopped being a good director, I'd love to see his Google Calendar.
Yeah.
It'd be wild. And I think he does such a good job showing characters who work really hard all the time in his films and don't quite know why.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all those people that he writes can be terribly lonely and isolated, even mm-hmm. if they have communities around them. But his films go out of their way to not necessarily get you to empathize with them,
yeah.
though he is like an emotionalist filmmaker, but he gets you to like find what is interesting about their ambition. And their ambition usually stems from like existential fears or some kind of isolation. And watching these characters go through trying to find similar people to them and build found families, like something in Boogie Nights, to then watching the characters do the polar opposite, which is self-destruct, I think is so addicting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It's so addicting to watch like highly determined, resourceful people succeed and fail with like the most stakes involved.
Yeah.
So he's done such a great job creating this like eclectic filmography of different themes and genres with still this consistent through line of characters that are so eager to express themselves and have all this like, I don't know, this angry vibe running through mm-hmm. their journeys too. And they have a sense of showmanship too. A lot of his characters I've noticed, especially in Unpacking Phantom Thread, are all trying to start businesses. Like they're
yeah.
all trying to start enterprises.
Yeah.
And he's showing the kind of rise and fall of that.
There's
he's just a
fascinating
writer.
Angst and obsession, like you said. And
yeah.
we'll definitely talk about this in our ranking later on in the episode. But it is also fascinating to look at his storytelling choices in terms of writing, but also visually
yeah.
that have evolved in how he frames these obsessive characters, right? You think of his more heightened characters in Punch Drunk Love and Adam Sandler, or you
Magnolia,
Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An iconic character.
Yeah. Or any, you know, Boogie Nights character.
Yeah. Any of them.
Yeah. Pick one. But I think as he gets further along, there's more subtle meditations, like I was talking about in Phantom Thread, or
yeah.
There Will Be Blood, even Master. We still have these eccentric characters and tragic characters, but I think there's more of the psychological focus
yes.
and subtext of their surroundings.
Yeah, it's like a focus on vibes more than anything
yeah.
in the later half of his career, which I'm into. What's interesting about his filmography too is I think he's made five essential pieces of art in the 21st century. Like, I think he's made eight singular movies outside of Hard Eight or Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I'd go as far to say that I think he's made three films specifically, all in different decades, that each feel like great novels come alive on screen.
Mm.
That might each be one of the best films of their specific decade, like Boogie Nights in the 90s or There Will Be Blood in the 2000s. And now Phantom Thread in the 2010s, probably competing with Parasite as the best movie of the 2010s. That's pretty incredible. We
yeah.
only really say that about the best filmmakers. Like, I feel like we've recently said that with Martin Scorsese, somebody who made maybe the best movie of their decade
yeah.
three or four times. And right now with Licorice Pizza, that might be in front of Worst Person in the World and maybe Tar or After Sun for me personally as the best project of the 2020s so far. And so it's crazy to see how prolific he's been through 3 or 4 decades now at making objectively iconic movies.
Yeah. Well, I think he's one of my favorite directors because he is interested in similar questions that if we look at other really huge directors, you know, someone like Scorsese is kind of revisits a theme, and there might be different worlds, but it often feels like he might be redoing a setting, right?
Yes.
And that's because that's his strength, to make that setting very authentic.
Yeah.
But PTA feels really special in that even though he is kind of looking at found family that people have identified or these obsessive, tragic men a lot of times in his movies, or women behind the men, which we'll get into today.
Yeah.
There are vastly different settings and they all feel so authentic and grounded and heightened where they need to be. I think he's just like a master of tone and of the subtleties in a story.
Yeah.
And so that's why I love him, because he does feel like he is actually producing unique films and wants to do something different and feels like he's challenging himself and challenging the audience in each new movie.
Totally. I think in his cohort of Quentin Tarantino or Richard Linklater or Wes Anderson, Noah Baumbach, Fincher, Spike Lee, maybe like Jane Campion, like a lot of different filmmakers around their age group who make incredible, excellent films and have masterpieces in their own right in their filmographies. But something about PTA playing within a mid-tier studio budget and never asking for more money means that he's had to sometimes play with less later in his career because he doesn't want any studio interference. And so because of that, he's had to be very subtle, I think, in his screenwriting. And he's been very great. He's been a lot better in the latter half of his career at suggestive filmmaking.
Yeah.
And his movies are becoming so thematically dense. Even movies that I think people reduce to something simple like Licorice Pizza, there was a lot there, especially in the periphery of that story in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I think these environments that he's writing, being led by these flawed, eccentric characters, wanting to be great, is such an interesting thing to deconstruct. It's something we talk a lot about with Damien Chazelle, which is something I identified like really early on with Whiplash. I was like, oh, this is a PTA figure, like in his 20s, making an indie film about the cost of ambition. Who does this sound like? It sounds a lot like Paul Thomas Anderson. And what's probably different about Anderson is he's more, I think, investigated this idea of all characters from different walks of life in his stories trying to be eternal somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And usually that can be romanticized, but PTA doesn't do that. He's like trying to investigate characters striving for something deeper than life itself. And he explores this kind of like corrosive, self-destructive nature of the cost of ambition through so many genres, through historical, sometimes modern epics, through grounded family dramas that turn into like big comedies, or something very subtle like Phantom Thread. And then sometimes not something very subtle like There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
And so I love that he jumps in and out of through lines like The Toxicity of Ambition and Found Family and Boogie Nights and Magnolia and Licorice Pizza, to then the constraints of ideology and religion and myths of America and There Will Be Blood and The Master, and then to investigating something like genre or unpacking famous mischaracterizations of history and inherent vice, and then obviously in Phantom Thread. I think he's done such a great job in all of those movies. And I do think you could argue he's made like 8 5-star movies.
Yeah, I think you could argue that. I think Inherent Vice for me, maybe this is giving too much away from my ranking, but Inherent Vice is something that people have told me like I need to revisit.
Mm-hmm.
I think on revisiting it, I still won't feel that it's 5-star, even though I really respect it.
Yeah, I admired it. I need more time with it too.
Yeah,
okay. I don't want to divulge
but
too
I'll
much.
Go with 7 5-stars.
I mean, that's a lot, guys. Yeah. Like, I can't name many filmmakers alive right now, if at all, actually, that have more than 5 5-star like masterpieces on my Letterboxd list. Maybe just Scorsese.
That's an episode.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's a great episode idea. But specifically with Phantom Thread, I'm pumped for today's episode because I think this is probably his most impressive script. I think it might be his greatest achievement because it shouldn't be this good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like an under 2-hour romance film from the 1950s. And he's making it in a country that he's not from.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just kind of a lot of obstacles there in terms of like the PTA mission and his through line that he's trying to accomplish. And so I was just floored on revisiting this and prepping for this movie about how dense it was, about not just the cost of romance, but this paradox of connection through unconditional love or through monogamy, and exploring the fantasy and the lies of a tortured genius, the tortured genius myth.
Yeah.
And in the periphery of this grounded, suspenseful chamber, tragic comic drama, and basically just rooms throughout the whole movie, in the periphery, you have a film just covered in suggestion about European history. And it also reveals a lot about those great man myths. And it conceals some really dark ideas, I think, that we're going to get into today. And usually what is not said through dialogue, and usually through symbolism, about anti-Semitism, homophobia, the English relationship to post-war Europe, the English aristocracy, classism. People talk about There Will Be Blood as PTA's most compressed, condensed, impenetrable movie, or maybe The Master. But to me, I think The Master is probably more fleeting for me personally. Mm. It's a movie that I think about randomly sometimes. Yeah. I'm like, do I understand anything from that film? But for me, There Will Be Blood wears its bold ideas on its sleeve. And because The Master is like more of this ethereal, psychological epic, Phantom Thread to me is his most subversive work and is one of the most intellectual romances that I've ever seen. And it feels like a secret epic, a part of his filmography.
Secrets.
Doesn't it feel like a historical epic in moments? It doesn't have that scope, but it has that tension that feels like things are happening that are bigger than what is on screen.
Yes, this is his most sophisticated movie. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that it's his smartest movie. I think he is doing interesting things and maybe similar things in There Will Be Blood, which feels like maybe a more macro, you know, comment on capitalism.
The building of America.
And he's doing something similar in terms of the cult following and genius figure in The Master.
Yeah.
Which I really like want to return to because
me too.
I do think about it, you know, in the middle of my
weirdly
day. Yeah. Just Philip Seymour Hoffman, like, you know, above all, I'm a man. But
above all, I'm a podcaster.
But something I really appreciate about Phantom Thread, and you said it's subversive. I think that is very true for both this movie and also for Licorice Pizza. And it gives us a little bit of an insight into what his future projects might be, especially with rumored casting for his next film. But I love that Phantom Thread is interrogating, or maybe the best portrayal of a great man movie.
Yeah.
And having Alma's perspective in this movie is crucial. And you really realize how kind of searing it is.
Yeah.
On rewatch. And also, we argued for this in Licorice Pizza that was Alana's movie.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting to see like where he's going in terms of his filmography, but why Phantom Thread is so special in this, a culmination of themes and of characters that he has been really like trying at, even in The Master with Amy Adams' character, for a long time. And I think finally it kind of perfects in Phantom Thread.
I agree. I wonder if it's just audiences aren't used to seeing a woman lead in PTA movies. And so when criticisms come across with Phantom Thread and Licorice Pizza as being slight or understated, I view that as just profound, because I can kind of, when you sit with them enough, you're like, oh, there's some delicate kind of, you know, weaving of the script going on here. And it's not just kind of like these journeys of characters behind broken men. These are actually like stories being told through woman. And specifically with Alma, the narrative is told through her perspective.
Yeah, she's narrating it.
Usually a lot of the emotional bits of the movie too. But yeah, I think, you know, Phantom Thread is one of the great comedies of the 21st century on the surface. Yeah. Obviously, but it's also like this deeply verbal and nonverbal violent film, and has like an incredibly dark outlook, I think, on how our genre expectations intersect sometimes with the horrors of our world and its history. So there's gonna be a lot to talk about today. I think Phantom Thread is a great encapsulation of PTA's major through line, which I made a Letterboxd list for this central thesis, which is that I think PTA is making movies about men who require unconditional love or else. And I think Phantom Thread is the best example of that recurring thematic idea of all the men in his films, that they will destroy the world or their microcosm of the world, which is the House of Woodcock in this film, if the woman in their lives do not commit to them forever, if they do not have a so-and-so to turn to do their bidding. And Alma is special because she gives the man in this film, Reynolds, what he wants, but at a cost.
Yeah.
A very buttery cost. Too much butter, some Too might much. Say.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. You know, Alma telling us very casually at the onset of the movie that in exchange for Reynolds' love, she must give every piece of her.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very clear declaration of the power dynamics that we see subtly unfold throughout the movie. But just because Reynolds is taking up the most space doesn't mean that he's necessarily the focus, right? I think his childish behavior is often the focus and how he continues to impact people around him. And the quiet nature in which that happens is what's fascinating about this movie.
Yeah.
And it's similar to The Red Shoes, where we have like Boris Lermontov saying like, no, like I'll do the talking and you do the dancing to Victoria Page.
Yeah.
There's a very similar relationship there. And the reason Phantom Thread is so successful, though, is because it takes that larger than life character that people put on a pedestal, or the great man myth and narrative that we often see in film. And it does something more so like Hitchcock's Rebecca, where what you were pointing out is it has this undertone of horror, right?
Yes, yeah.
And it focuses on what is haunting Reynolds and how he then is impacting the people around him. And the reason that Phantom Thread is one of my favorite movies of all time is because I think it does this the most successful in terms of interrogating the great man myth narrative that we continue to see. And the reason why I think it is the most successful is because we see how the woman in the story are being impacted, Cyril and Alma specifically. And he continues to do this in Licorice Pizza too, right? Like on our episode, we said that we wanted to start this podcast because we didn't see a lot of people talking about how that was Alana's story.
Yeah. And it was subversive to portray Gary as like a younger Reynolds Woodcock pre-empire.
Yeah.
Because really a lot of the men in PTA's characters are trying to build empires.
Yeah.
In some small ways and some very large ways.
Yeah.
And Reynolds already has one. And so a lot of what you imagine about his genius is implied. You don't really see his quote unquote genius. And that's a kind of a point of that movie. And Gary's a little bit of a loser in Licorice Pizza. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of lost on a lot of people coming out of that film. Understandably, because that's the subversive move from PTA.
Yeah.
He's like telling people to come into a romantic comedy that's going to make you feel uncomfortable. And then you leave kind of unpacking the genre a little bit more and realizing you actually just watched more of a psychological thriller comedy with a lot of suspense.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it so enticing to come back to.
Yes.
There's so much there.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it also gives us some insight into what might inform his future work, especially with the rumored casting.
Regina Hall might be starring in his next movie next to Joaquin Phoenix and Leonardo DiCaprio, which would be pretty wild. That's the rumor.
If that all pans out.
Yeah.
But
Viggo Mortensen possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wild. But yeah, so I'm so pumped to talk about Phantom Thread today and the influences that I just kind of touched on right there. But
you did the prep for this episode. I didn't do as much as you actually for the movie recommendations. As always, our Extra Credits Plus episodes are deep dives, but they are also live commentaries. So we will be discussing Phantom Thread while watching it. And if you're on the main feed, then you're listening to the first 30 minutes of this episode. So if you go into the description, you'll find our Patreon, the Extra Credits Plus, where you can join us on Living Plus to get access to the full 2 to 3 hour deep dives we publish on there. So for any listeners who want to listen and watch along, you can stream Phantom Thread right now on Netflix. We also own it on 4K, which I recommend.
Yes.
All right. You ready for some Welsh rabbit and some scones? Yes. All right, on play, we'll begin the movie. 3, 2, 1, play. All right, Phantom Thread was released in 2017. Mm-hmm. So let's go back to 2017.
Oh, wow, okay.
We graduated college.
Yeah.
We saw so many movies this year.
Yeah.
And the year of 2017 in film is wild. What I want to do for a second is I'm going to name off some of my favorite movies from that year. And I want you to tell me whether or not Phantom Thread is better than all of these.
Okay.
Because you established at the top of the pod that it's one of your favorite films.
Yeah.
And I just want to make sure because there are some great movies here. Ready?
Yeah.
Split, Logan Lucky, The Last Jedi, Alien Covenant, Logan, Okja, Raw, Baby Driver, Blade Runner 2049, I, Tonya, Mother, Good Time, A Ghost Story, The Post, Three Billboards, Personal Shopper, Call Me By Your Name, The Shape of Water, The Florida Project,
wow.
Dunkirk, Lady Bird, and Get Out.
Whoa.
A wild group.
Yeah. Okay. That is a lot. It's hard to compare genres because like I also loved Get Out and yeah. Blade Runner 2049.
Yes.
I think for you, it's probably Florida Project.
I love the Florida Project, but after revisiting Phantom Thread, I think this movie is definitely number one. I have Get Out at number two.
I think so too.
And then probably Florida Project at three or Blade Runner 2049, and then probably Lady Bird and Dunkirk and so forth.
Yeah, I think Phantom Thread wins out. I also do want to give another shout out to a movie on this list that has a parallel with Phantom Thread, which is Logan Lucky.
Okay.
And has one of my favorite quotable scenes that I guess we quote Phantom Thread to each
we
other
do.
Also, but I quote Definitely. This to you from Logan Lucky, where Adam Driver says, "I made bacon just the way you like it, and just the way I hate it."
And underrated Soderbergh.
A great parallel with Phantom Thread in terms of Alma making asparagus just the way she likes it.
Oh.
And just the way Reynolds hates it.
Interesting. Love that. So Phantom Thread had 6 Oscar nominations. It won for costumes, appropriate for a film that looks like this with designer dresses yeah. in the House of Woodcock. Also, it has incredible production design for being stuck in a home for most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what we just got introduced to was Alma as the framing device, sitting by the fire mm-hmm. in a very gothic environment.
Yeah.
And what was clear on rewatch is that it's her story, right? She's setting this kind of parallel timeline up where she is going to be by the fire in the future, telling somebody who we later realize is the doctor about where she is emotionally mm-hmm. in different parts of her relationship with Reynolds and then where she perceives him emotionally. And that's really the narrative conceit of this film, which is interesting.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. And it's something that I didn't notice on first watch where she is really telling us the emotional beats of the story.
Mm-hmm.
She is the focus of the story, even though, you know, we don't focus on her first to an extent, right? We're like being introduced to the house for the most part
mm-hmm.
at the beginning here as Cyril opens up the house and lets the workers in and
yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis is getting ready as Reynolds Woodcock.
I love him preparing for his day.
Yeah.
Shaving, brushing his hair so but, aggressively.
Yeah, I know. Well, we have to talk about the getting ready scenes in a moment
the
here.
Morning routine.
And just this whole, opening scene.
The introduction to the House of Woodcock.
I do want to shout out the music change from that opening scene because when Alma is telling the doctor that Reynolds has made her dreams come true, and she's given him what he desires most in return, which is every piece of him. And they're talking about how demanding of a man he is and maybe the most demanding man ever.
Yes.
Right. And it's probably a challenge to be with him. There's this kind of like pitchfork, eerie sound that's happening.
Yeah, the piano.
Yeah, and underneath. Well, it's not the piano.
Okay.
It's like it's not a violin. I think it is a pitchfork, but it's like a horror sound, right? As the fire is crackling and we open to her talking to the doctor and telling us kind of like the story that we're about to see. But then immediately when she kind of smiles and says that basically like she's about to tell us how this unfolds or mm-hmm. she hints at it, we get this swell of romantic piano.
Yes.
And we see Reynolds very
his
focused.
Shaving cream.
Yeah, getting ready scene. Yeah, shaving, trimming his ears and nose, polishing his shoes. Just extreme focus.
Yes.
And I think it's interesting because getting ready, you know, like as a human is not necessarily a sign of vanity. But in this movie, it's certainly showing pieces of that because it's showing what him and Cyril maintain in the house, right? Like he is maintaining himself as the head of the House of Woodcock.
As an aesthetic.
Yeah, as the creative genius. Hi.
Hello there. Sorry for interrupting.
Yeah, thank you for listening so far and hopefully hopefully you are enjoying
the
episode so far. I feel like maybe if you made it this far.
They got it this far. They're having a good time.
I mean, let's hope. But to access our full conversation, you can go to the description of this episode to join our Patreon community, the Extra Credits Plus.
Yes. And for only $5 a month, you can get access to our full catalog of Patreon exclusive episodes. Hope to see you there.